Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
What has happened now is we've evolved away from just designation of ILE as ILE to emphasis on screening, on longitudinal strategies on handling this disease, particularly in at-risk population.
Today, Drs. Adgun Soye and Call join the podcast to discuss highlights from CHEST 2025, proactive intervention, and precision medicine in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative supporters.
Welcome back to Conversation about Highlights from CHEST 2025. I'm Deji Adegun Soye. I'm an assistant professor of medicine and the scientific director of the Interstitial Lung Disease Program at the University of Chicago. I also serve on the Committee on Clinical Pharmacology and Pharmacogenomics within the Biological Services Division and the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine.
And I'm Vivica Kaul. I'm an assistant professor of pulmonary and critical care medicine and health services research at Baylor College of Medicine. I also serve as a core investigator with the Health Policy, Quality, and Informatics program at the VA Center for Innovation in Quality, Effectiveness, and Safety.
You mentioned the recent ATS 2025 ILA statement. So I think this was built, again, around the Fleischner framework, which remains the ultimate scaffold for how we define ILAs in practice. And so the talk and the discussion around is centered around how do we define ILAs more carefully? How do we risk stratify patients by distribution, by extent? And this is all what we talked about in the ILA statement from 2025, the ATS statement as well. It also emphasized importance of not labeling everyone as pre-ILD, which you might hear in common parlance, right? What is really evolved, what has happened now is we've evolved away from just designation of ILE as ILE to emphasis on screening, on longitudinal strategies on handling this disease, particularly in at-risk population. So who are the at-risk populations? I'm talking about older adults, those who have been flagged by lung cancer screening algorithms in our clinics, and patients who are at risk for other reasons like genetic causes as well. The most helpful updates I found in this conference, they really synthesize around how we can combine clinical risk. I'm talking age, smoking, exposures, how we can combine radiologic pattern, the subpleural pattern versus fibrotic features, how we can combine underlying physiology in terms of FVC decline and DLCO to use that information to decide who gets closer to follow-up, who should we more closely monitor, who should we refer to ILD clinic because they've now stepped into the era of disease, into the phase of having a definitive condition that should be addressed objectively, or even discuss early antifibrotic therapy, right? If it really is amenable to that. We want to think carefully about who is progressing, who has met the criteria for progression, how we define it today. And all of these were very interesting topics that emerged during the conference. I felt the conversation felt much more algorithmic, less hand-wavy, which we've seen in the past, even just as recently as 2 years ago. The other thing I will say real quick, is PH-ILD. And beyond the ILA space, you alluded to the fact that we now have inhaled treprostinil causing a lot of buzz in the ILD space. So PH-ILD gained a lot of traction as well. There were several sessions where people talked about it a lot. But I felt that we've moved more from the phenotype phase of PH-ILD, where you have that clinical phenotype, to talking more about precision therapy. Who has the disease? How can we intervene in a way that's meaningful to patients and makes a change, makes a difference for their outcomes? You alluded to INCREASE earlier on, so beyond revisiting INCREASE as the hallmark backbone of the PH-ILD trial, some of the best sessions actually reframe PH-ILD as not one disease. There's now talk and emphasis on pulmonary vascular remodeling driven by fibrosis, but in addition to that, we also have thromboinflammatory and microvascular contributions that may not fully correlate to the CT burden we see on imaging in these patients. Practically, that means to me that one, we can screen deliberately in these patients, what echo findings are important to patients. We can look at DLCO that's out of proportion in our patients. We can identify cases where there is escalating desaturation and pulse oximetry, the pulse oximeter as we put on our fingers, where it starts to drop beyond what we expect in these patients. And now we can step into the era of treating the right patients, more carefully phenotyped individuals who have PH-ILD, where we can intervene on. And those are patients who have true pulmonary vascular disease. And now we have the ability to step into inhaled treprostinil in caring for these patients, while on the background continuing antifibrotic and ILD-specific care. We now have TETON 2, which hints at FVC benefits in patients with IPF. Again, we hope it's approved. We want to see what the peer review will show and what the FDA will do about it. But you can sense already that there's a bridge forming between what we know classically as the PH-ILD drug and the fibrosis drug. And those two have been melded together in one agent. And so I think we may very soon start to see a tailored prostacycline pathways early on in terms of therapy in select fibrotic phenotypes.
I love that you said so many great pearls there, Deji. One of the key things that you mentioned is that the field is increasingly moving towards precision medicine, right? And the way I define precision medicine is the right patient for the right treatment at the right time. And that can be applied to the lessons you were sharing in PH-ILD. It can be applied to the ILAs you were highlighting and the importance of risk stratification. And one of the things that I know we are both passionate about in the spirit of getting the right patient plugged in with the right care at the right time is improving access. Because the reality is that none of these clinical trials will lead to benefit if the medications don't actually reach the patients they seek to serve. So I'm curious to know whether access was highlighted in any of the sessions. I know one of your passions is also equity and whether that was something that was discussed as well.
Yeah, there was a very exciting session I participated in as well that addressed the very question you're asking. So there was a lot of talk about equity, about ensuring better access to patients. And in terms of access, I'm talking about not just insurance. There's uninsured and underinsured patients. There's the rural-urban differences that patients encounter. There's access when it comes to disparities in healthcare areas like age, sex or gender, and even racial and ethnic disparities as well. So that session focused not just on the problems that we see, the disparities that we identify, but it talked a lot about how can we ameliorate these disparities? How can we address the health inequities that prevent access to patients? How can we make things better, make conditions more favorable for patients to access the medications, access diagnostics, and also reduce the disparities that we see so that the outcomes we see are much better, so that the healthcare outcomes that patients currently grapple with are ameliorated in a way that's palpable, that makes a real difference in this space. We talked about algorithms that can be implemented in hospitals and also in clinics as well for patients with IPF, how to improve access to insurance, how to improve access to medications, how to leverage policies that are in place to make things better for patients and as such translate to improved outcomes in ILD.
That sounds great, Deji. Maybe to end, you can share with us what your most practice-changing takeaway has been from CHESS so far.
Yeah, so we've certainly talked about a lot of things today. I'll zoom out and first say that one of the major themes that resonated with me at the conference was there was a lot of talk about sequencing and combination. And this is how I would really like to translate that to bedside moves right now, today. I think in this space, we want to start with biology and behavior. Is this an immune-driven fibrosis, for example, SOD-ILD, or is this a primary fibrotic disease? Is it IPF or PPF? Now, that question really determines where immunosuppression fits in versus where antifibrotic medication fit in on day one. The SOD-ILD guidance keeps us honest on steroids. It keeps us honest on what should be the first-line therapy, what should be our first-line choice in data, and not just our cultural practices. When we've identified that, we now want to escalate when the trajectory says so. So you only use PPF consensus, FVC symptoms or imaging to trigger antifibrotic initiation or intensification of therapy. So in short, don't wait for a cliff drive, right? Don't wait for patients to fall over the cliff. You want to intervene before that. You want to screen early for PH-ILD and treat it as its own target when it's present. You want to use inhaled treprostinil because of the benefit it confers in PH-ILD if it's an established condition. And for those who have IPF where the FVC signal has been identified as declining, you want to think about what vascular-centric therapies may change the outcomes in these patients in addition to current FDA therapies as well. So thinking about trials and not silos, right? That's the way I would think about it. And now we have nerandomilast and treprostinil coming down the pike, already approved. That's nerandomilast and IPF, and hopefully will be approved for PPF after peer review in a matter of a few months as well. And so think safety first with a plan to measure what matters in patients. I'm talking acute exacerbations, patient-reported outcomes, and survival, not just annualized FVC. I will mention back again about the equity lens that you talked about earlier, because I think it's really important for our day-to-day practice in 2025. The sessions on race, on sex and gender, on neighborhood disparities, all of these moved from, you know, we know disparities exist. We know there are problems with the healthcare sector. It moved to, here is what you can do right now on a Monday morning in your clinic. We want to standardize the diagnosis in patients, and also the time to treatment should be shortened. So getting time to diagnosis metrics shortened for patients, time to treatment benchmarks shortened for patients, and then leveraging patient navigation schemes, telehealth or tele-ILD mechanisms in place to get patients the therapies, the diagnostics that they need as soon as possible. You want to treat language and pharmacy access as clinical variables, not afterthoughts that come after the fact in patients with ILD. I think all of these globally resonate with us. It aligns with the recent data that's been published in pulmonary fibrosis and also helps with addressing racial and ethnic and sex and gender and neighborhood disparities in patients with ILD. And overall, while, as you know, you've published on this before, we have also published on this, I think all of these hop back to our day-to-day practice and how we can improve outcomes in patients, leveraging these nuggets in our everyday practice in ILD. Now, talk about globally, like the summary of what you asked, how do we think about a summative approach to all of this? What's the one summative statement I can make about the conference? If you were to force me today to name the single most practice-changing takeaway that I had from this conference, it is that precision is finally practical for us. Not omics for the sake of omics, but algorithmic risk-based monitoring for patients with ILAs, phenotype concordant therapy for sad ILDs, and vascular fibrotic balancing or crosstalk for patients who have pulmonary fibrosis. Now, thinking about it that way helps us personalize combination therapy with intention, not just because we want to. There are clear guidelines that resonate with us and rhyme across societies in the treatment of patients with ILD. The trials measure endpoints that we care about, but that even those endpoints, like we talked about, are rapidly changing to be more patient-centric, more objective, and meaningful outcomes are being more targeted in these clinical trials. We've moved from PDE4B inhibition to inhaled prostacycline, and we haven't done that in so many years. So when you tie all that together, we now have disciplined definitions of progression, of equity, health equity, across strategies. And CHEST 2025 felt to me like a pivot from hold the line to push the curve towards better outcomes. So in short, the short answer is what stood out to me, real signals in IPF, real signals in PH-ILD drug development, and a matured playbook for handling SOD ILDs in our everyday practice. There's also the upgraded approach to ILDs that I think will now pull disease detection forward as opposed to just watching it fester on in patients who are at risk. If we execute on those three items, patients will certainly feel the difference. There'll be earlier recognition, there'll be fewer crashes, and treatments that actually match the biology of patients will feel more palpable, more real to patients, and more real for us as clinicians and caregivers.
Thank you, Deji, for taking us through not just the biology, but also the relevant clinical impact on patients. Because I think at the end of the day, as ILD pulmonologists, what we're trying to do is make a difference in patients' lives and the care that they receive today. And just to highlight one of the things you ended on, it seems like we are primed to potentially launch a clinical trial looking at combination therapy and how best to layer therapies to make that difference.
Absolutely, Bhavika. This has been a great discussion. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to have you on set with me.
My pleasure, Deji. This has been great chatting with you. And thanks for being our eyes and ears on the ground at CHEST.
Thank you.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, what's my Flash Briefing? Thanks today to our guest, Dr. Zadon Consoye and Call. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.